Welcome to Relative Paths. We're a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I'm Mark Phoenix, host one, and I'm joined by Ben Hutchings, who's host A.
I don't mind being host two.
Host number two. Okay, and this week we're talking about WordPress plug-in development, tips, tricks, and gotchas. And joining us to help us with that is Mark Wilkinson. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Now, we met you, Mark, at WordCamp Birmingham, which was... How long ago was that now, actually? It was a few months, wasn't it?
It was in February, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was a while ago, wasn't it? Time flies, yeah.
It really does fly, actually. And I think you were talking about content manage everything there, weren't you?
That's correct, yeah. There's a talk about making sure you can sort of make all your website editable with the client so they can, you know, change pretty much everything themselves. So that was my talk there.
Good stuff. But we're talking to you about plugin development today. But we like our listeners to kind of get to know our guests a little bit. So how did you get started in the wide world of the web?
Well, I have been a teacher for 12 years. So I've been doing something completely different. And it was through education, really, that I started in terms of the web. I've always been interested in computers, but never really sort of followed that path. And then once, well, back in about, oh, must have been 2005, the world of e-learning started. And every school thought that they had to have, you know, the world's most sophisticated sort of e-learning platform. And as I showed an interest in, you know, technology and computers, it was tasked to me to sort of find something that works. And that's how I started with WordPress, really. Found WordPress and started doing some really simple blogs, you know, for education, just so that the you know, could share some resources and things. And then it just sort of moved on from there. And eventually I started developing some websites, intranet type sites for the school, and then moved on to using WordPress as a CMS more than a blog, so that we could edit pages and have contents and stuff. And then I started freelancing about 08, 09, something like that, just in the evenings and weekends. Did that for 5 or 6 years, really. And then I went full-time. I quit teaching in May of 2014. And so I've been doing that now since, 18 months or so now. So it's been going good.
Excellent. Do you find clients a bit more easy to manage than school kids?
No, actually. yeah, it depends. School kids were fun at times and not at others, but it's just very different, isn't it? Two very different groups of people, and it's just very different skills you need to sort of, you know, manage each one.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, this isn't our subject. I mean, how do you find that it helps you with educating clients? Do you think that you've already kind of, you're already a step ahead of like us who haven't been in the education world?
I'd like to think so. And the feedback I get from clients is that they find me a non-jargon person, if you know what I mean? So that they seem to understand what I'm saying. And maybe that's because I've had to do that in the past. Maybe I've got nothing to do with that, I don't know. But, you know, some people, the feedback I've had says that they sort of understand what I'm saying, and maybe that's partly due to having been an educator, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Okay, and maybe being able to explain things to children is quite a useful skill when it comes to explaining things to clients.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay, so what we're going to start our main topic now. Now we know a little bit about you. We wanted to talk about the idea of finding an idea for a plugin. This is a plugin for WordPress that either could eventually become commercial or something, but that would end up in the WordPress plugins repository. And when we were talking to you over some show notes and things, you said that you had quite a good example of one that you've developed that you wouldn't mind explaining a bit to us and our listeners how that came about. So what's that plugin that we're going to talk about now?
The plugin's called WP Broadbean. And what it is, there's a number of services actually out there, but Broadbean are a company that offer job posting software. And essentially what a client would do is they'd log into their online service, they would write a job, and they would then choose which job boards they would like to send that job to. And some of the popular ones would be on there. But as part of that, the company, Broadbean, obviously offer a service where you can send the job to your own website. And a lot of people are running WordPress websites. And I was tasked about 3 or 4 years ago now with actually integrating this into a WordPress site. So I went about doing that. And then 6 months later, I was asked to do it again. and therefore, I thought, there's nothing out there, actually, that would allow someone to do this relatively easily. It's a slight lie, because there was something out there, but a lot of people came to me because they didn't like it.
Okay.
And that's how the plugin was born, really. It was a solution that I'd implemented and then thought, why am I to keep implement this in a hardware when I can just sort of package it up into a plugin, hopefully, and make it much easier for myself and for others?
I see, yeah. So at first it was a plugin you were creating for clients, your own clients. So presumably you didn't have to worry at all about the actual plugins repository or making it, getting it passed through anything, because you would just install it yourself and maintain it yourself.
It was very much, just make it work and not really worry about the plugin or the solution itself. Obviously, we were, doing the right things for security and so forth as best we could, but we weren't really worried if it would, need updating and so forth, because we would handle that. Whereas now, when you've built a plugin that's sort of out there and for everybody to use, every time you do make a decision, you've got to think of the impact this decision might have on the, 80, 100 installs that might be out there.
Yeah, of course. And I think we'll go on to talk about that a little bit in terms of maintaining it and keeping it updated later on in this podcast. So when you set out with it, in terms of the structure and things, did Broadbean have an API or something that you were able to hook into?
They don't have an API, but they had a method of sending the data to a website. And then they had a couple of methods. And obviously I picked one of those methods to use. And then they have an integrations team, which obviously I had to sort of work with to develop what they call a feed, which is basically every time you post a job there, it just sends a lot of information to your WordPress website. And then the plugin takes that information, turns it into a job post, essentially. And I had to sort of develop that side of things to make it work on accepting that data and making it work on the website, which is what the plugin essentially does.
Right. Okay. Okay, and was that quite a challenge in itself, or was it fairly straightforward?
It was a challenge when I first did it, because it was something new to me, but when I look back, it's fairly straightforward. I think the thing that makes the plugin more useful, I would suggest, is its extensibility, in that it will do the basic job itself, but it can be tweaked and modified to do lots of other things, which is where I'm sort of trying to sort of develop the plugin now, really, and move it forward.
Okay, so you think you might be able to build on it and add additional features in the future?
Yeah.
Is there any thought of going commercial with it, or is that something you would rather not talk about?
No, I've thought and thought about how to take it commercial. I mean, I always wanted it to be open source. That was the key from the start, really, and that's why I put it in the WordPress.org plugins repository. What it does is very basic, and it could go a long way. And my thought was perhaps to produce some sort of add-ons for it, which would enable additional functionality to be added, and lots of ideas on what could be done there. One of them is, more advanced search, for example, because out of the box it just has the WordPress default search, which searches post titles and descriptions. But clients want to have it where you can sort of search for a job that's in the northwest of England between this salary and this salary.
Yeah, I see.
In this specific category, for example, a type of job. And that's something that we could I have done for clients, but obviously it might be something that would be good as a little add-on that someone could purchase and just activate, and there you have it.
Ah, okay. Well, that sounds good, and it sounds like you've got some sort of future development there, so you can take it places. So could we talk a bit about when you decided, hang on, I've done this before, I'm probably going to have to do this again, I may as well make this a bit more portable and actually put it in the repository. What challenges did you meet then in terms of, I'm thinking along the lines of code standards, actually getting it pushed up there? Whether, I don't know about you, but I use Git, but I've never used Subversion. So I understand that. Is it right that the WordPress repository uses Subversion?
It is, unfortunately. I mean, I'm sure Subversion is really good, and it must have its good features. But like yourself, I use Git.
Mm.
And plugin is on GitHub, and any sort of development of the plugin is done there. It's much easier to work with a community, if you like, I find.
Yeah.
You can get contributions from people and so on. So in terms of you know, moving it from sort of your own plugin to getting it on there, there's obviously the guidelines in terms of the WordPress coding standards, which are available on the WordPress.org site, making sure you're following those sort of rules and regulations, should we say. Although I suppose they're not rules and regulations, but they're guidance, aren't they? But so doing that sort of thing. And the main thing for me was making it so that, you know, it wouldn't break people's sites, because and testing it on a lot of different environments as much as you can anyway. You know, what happens if someone installs it with PHP 5.3, was it 3 or 2, the lowest version of WordPress, I'm not sure, 2 I think it is. You know, whereas I might have been running 5.6 or something.
Yeah.
And trying to test it out on those, and just things like that. I mean, is there any plugins that it's going to clash with that you know of? And I've had a slight issue with it in that one of the it includes another library for the meta boxes that it has on each post screen. So just so that you can enter the data much easier when you're editing the actual job in WordPress. And a few people have told me that clashes with another one that's got the same name. So it's just things like that we need to think about. And rather than when you're working out on your own, you can just, you know what your environment is, you know what site you're putting it on, it will work, or, you know. So those are the sorts of main things when you sort of take it to the plugin repository,
okay,
rather than having it just for yourself.
Okay. Does it have to actually pass some sort of, like App Store, does it have to pass some sort of test?
In theory, yes. Every plugin that's uploaded to WordPress.org is code checked. How robust that is probably another argument for another podcast.
Okay.
I know I've heard several stories of people deliberately uploading bad plugins and they get into the repository.
Yeah.
But there is a system. You know, you don't add it and then it's there. You've got to add it and then someone has got to sort of accept it, and then once they've accepted it, you get access to the SVN repository where you can then push your plugin up.
Okay, I see. And you've also got people are going to find bugs pretty quickly, aren't they, anyway? So I guess you people can be your bug checkers and bug testers, if any exist.
Yeah, once you've, I saw a quote once that said, you know, when you've got a plugin, when you're working on a plugin for yourself and you've got a problem, you've got one problem. And when you're working on it for, you know, lots of other people because you've put it out there into the public, you've suddenly got like 100 or 200 problems.
Yeah.
Because everyone's having the same, you know, same issues and things. But I think, you know, there's never a right time really to sort of say, I'm ready for this now. I'm ready to put it out there in the world and let everyone use it. So actually just do it. You know, it will have bugs. It's never going to be 100% right. But the nature of open source is great. Other people can then, you know, report those bugs that you'd never have found.
Mm. So how many plugins have you got at the moment? Because I think I've seen you tweeting about a couple of others, maybe smaller ones in the past. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I've got about 9, I think, on the
oh, wow.
.org repository. Most are relatively small ones. If you ask me to list them now, I'd struggle.
No, it's okay.
and some of them are actually, for me, in terms of I use them on every client site that I make. One of them sort of does some changes to the dashboard and with capabilities so that my clients can't sort of, like, you know, add plugins that's going to break the sites and things.
Right.
And actually having them in the WordPress.org repository, it's good because it makes me think about all of these things that you have to think about when you've got a plugin out there for a lot of people, in that I'm going to code it better because it's on multiple sites and I know it's on multiple sites and could get updated.
Yes, yeah.
So was Broadbean your first plugin then?
No, I don't think it was my first plugin on WordPress.org. I did do one plugin which was really just for me to learn how it works, really, which was all it did was sort of output all the names of the hooks and filters in the WordPress admin so you could basically see where they were fired. And that was really just for me to learn how to use it. It's never been updated or anything. That was probably my first plugin. And I think Broadbean, the WP Broadbean plugin was added, I think I started it in December of 2013. So obviously it's developed on and on from then.
Okay. I mean, have you got plans for more in the future? Do you find it's kind of, once you develop one plugin, you want to sort of keep on doing more and more? Is it a bit addictive?
It can be a little bit addictive. I only release plugins that I think are going to be useful for other people, and plugins that are more sort of generic rather than a specific use case that would have to fix a problem.
Right.
Because that might be really specific to what I've got, and it's not going to be really useful for anyone else because it would require so much understanding and change for them to be able to make use of it. Then there's not really much point. I was working on a site a few weeks ago now, and they wanted to, the client, one of the requirements was that they only wanted to allow 5 tags to be added to each post. So basically to limit the amount of tags that you have.
Right.
So I thought that would actually be a really good plugin. I'm sure people have always wanted, you know, to have that sort of functionality. Mm. So instead of just sort of developing it as part of the site, I thought, well, let's just build a plugin. And if it works well, I can then put it in the repository, and that's on there now. It's called WP Limit Tags. Very straightforward. It's just a bit of jQuery to sort of stop you from adding more than the number that you set in the settings page.
Okay, that sounds useful. We'll add that to the show notes, actually.
Yeah, we will. Okay, that's good. Okay, well, we want to go on and talk a little bit about maintaining plugins and things like that. Shall we stop now for a tool star, Mark?
Yeah, I think now's the time.
Okay, good. We'll just do that.
Okay, so this is our Tool Star section where we feature tools or apps that are useful to us as web developers. We don't have a read of the week this week to clear a bit of extra space because, Mark, I think you've got 2 for us this week, haven't you?
I have indeed, yeah.
Okay, so Farah, which one is the first one you want to mention?
So the first one is a small little app for Mac users, and it's called Gas Mask. I have no idea why it's called Gas Mask. And what it allows you to do is to edit the local hosts file on your machine. So when I'm developing websites, I develop locally first on my actual Mac. So I like to sort of make it a nice URL that will work locally. So instead of having, you know, domain.com, I probably do like domain.dev. Mm-hmm. And then point that at the local IP address. And to do that, you need to edit your host file. And you can do it in the terminal, and, you know, it's a bit clunky though. Whereas this app allows you to really easily edit your local host file. And it also allows you to have multiple ones. So you could actually have a host file for development, and you could switch to that host file when you start developing and then switch back to the default one when you finish developing so that you've got no changes affected at all. It's just a really nice little tool for doing that job.
Yeah, that's quite useful. That I'm going to try and use that myself because do you use MAMP or anything like that, or do you just use the bundled Apache that's in your Mac?
No, I use MAMP, and the MAMP Pro version, I think it kind of handles some of those local host files for you, but I haven't got that. I've just got the normal MAMP version, but you can still actually do most of the stuff that you can with Pro. You just need to be able to know where to edit, and this little app allows you to, you know, easily edit that host file rather than just sort of type all the commands in the terminal.
That's good. That's useful. I'm looking for that, something like that, which is good, and I'm also looking for something to manage the vhosts file because I should just buy MAMP, but because I've been using it just with what was bundled and then upgrading, yeah, you know, upgrading PHP when I need to and bits and bobs like that. Every time I add a site, I add it into the vhosts file, which isn't difficult. It's just a bit of a pain because, like you say, it's in the terminal. So you spend your time in, I use Nano. Another little app to do that. Maybe I'll try and look for something and add it to yours in the tool star.
I tend to edit that file just in the text editor on the Mac. Because it's in one of the MAMP folders, depending on which sort of system you're using. But I usually edit it that often. It's in the recent files list in text editor.
Oh, so yeah. Okay.
Just told to keep, you know, edit it quickly. But yeah, a little app to help to do that would be good.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Well, that's useful. And you've got another tool stuff for us.
Yeah, this is one I've had problems with for a long time. And I'm sure this has actually been out a long time, but I've only just found it recently. And that's the modern.ie website, which allows you to test, if you're on a Mac, which I am, it allows you to test lots of versions of Internet Explorer. So you can test your site in different versions of Internet Explorer and different versions of Internet Explorer on different operating systems. So Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8, and so on. And it basically allows you to download a virtual machine. So you can use a number of software for virtual machines. I use VirtualBox, which is really simple and it's free. And you can download a whole virtual machine with like Windows 7 and IE9, and then you can just fire that up when you want to test your website, go in, test it out, see if it works, and then you can just shut it down again. And you can have multiple ones open at the same time, so you can be testing it in IE9, 10, 11, and Edge, or whatever. And it's just something that I think has been around for a while, but I've just found that it's been really, really helpful, particularly a couple of projects recently where I've had some really funny things in like IE9 that's just not been able to find otherwise. it's good. I mean, they take up a bit of space on your computer, which is a little bit of a disadvantage, but it's a good way of doing it without having to sort of purchase a new computer.
Yeah, I used it up until I bought my MacBook Pro, like a Retina one, with an SSD, so it had a small drive.
Yeah.
And at that point, suddenly it became a pain. And I did get VirtualBox working with the images sat on a little SD card. But I found it wasn't very, well, firstly, it was slow.
Yeah.
And also, VirtualBox didn't really want to operate like that. It took a fair bit of hacking.
Yeah.
And if I updated VirtualBox or updated any of the VMs, I suddenly find that they just copied themselves back into the documents folder on my Mac.
Right.
And suddenly, because I'm working at any point, I'm normally working with about 30 gig free, which is fine day in, day out. But suddenly, you only need two VMs on there. And it's gone.
Yeah.
So now I use Browser Stack, which I mentioned last time, which is a paid service, and it's just browser testing online. But yeah, good. VirtualBox, I would also recommend that because I've used Parallels, Plesk, I think it is Parallels, and found that VirtualBox is free and probably better.
Yeah, it does a good job. It's good.
Okay, so yeah, that's been useful. Thanks for those. So let's get back to part two of our topic. Right, so let's talk a little bit about maintaining your plugins. I don't know if you want to specifically talk about the WP Broadbean or one of your others, but as soon as it's on the repository, people presumably end up posting either bugs or feature requests. I suppose the bigger the plugin, the more you would get. So you want to be pushing out updates for those. But also the WordPress core updates, and sometimes they do depreciate functionality, don't they? They tell you shouldn't be using certain function calls anymore.
That's right, yeah.
So how would you, or how are you planning to go about doing that?
Well, I'm still in the infant stage of that, I guess. And I'm sure I'll refine the process as I work, you know, more on it. But as I've already said, everything you do, you've got to be very careful in that, is this going to have any knock-on effects to anything else that someone else might have done? And it's very hard to sort of, you know, catch every situation. But when you're developing and adding new features, you've got to be very wary of that at all times, and particularly keeping up with core as well. I mean, you can sign up to sort of the mailing list at the make.wordpress.org, which is where the sort of core development happens and is, you know, discussed and talked about, just to make sure that you're keeping up to date with what's coming in core, and therefore you can, you know, test out with the beta releases and so forth. But, you know, keeping up to date with the development is hard, because you've got, you know, your client sites to develop at the same time, and then you've got to jump back onto this and make sure it's up to date. So it's tricky and something that's getting better at, but still sort of working on, really.
Okay. And not only just making sure it works on the newer versions, but just letting people know it does. In the plugins repo, it will say that this plugin is compatible up to, or tested up to, certain versions. How do you update that? Is that literally a number in a text file?
It is, basically, yeah. It's a number in a text file. But obviously, I don't want to change that until I'm confident that it actually does work in that version. And you'll actually see there's a lot of plugins in the repository where the sort of latest version is or supported latest version is probably less than the current one. But actually, they do work. It's just that I think either the developer's not got round to sort of making sure he's done a full, or she's done a full test on it.
Yeah.
And therefore doesn't want to sort of commit to changing that, because everyone will be saying, oh, it doesn't work with that version and so on. So I think probably I'm probably guilty of the same, really, is needing to, you know, test it out quicker when the release comes out, or when you know, when they're sort of doing the pre-release and the betas and the release candidates. But it is just changing the text file and saying, look, we now support, you know, 4.3 in this example, but it's relatively straightforward.
Okay, so is it just you working on maintaining the plugins, or do you have any help? Do you have a bit of a team?
No, it's just me on my own. Yeah. I mean, I've had some contributions from the community, which has been nice. So a few people who have used the WP Broadbean plugin and, you know, wanted to do something different with it, and therefore they then contributed back on GitHub with a pull request, which has been nice. You know, you get a bit more development quicker then, because you've got other people helping you. The beauty of open source, which is, you know, another one of the reasons I wanted to push it open source, and, you know, let other people see what's going on and contribute back. So, but other than that, no, it's just me.
Okay, that's good. And I was thinking about also the idea of donations and things. I wanted to ask you whether often on a lot of plugins, there is a donate to this author. Is that something that the repository handles, or is that something that you just switch on and off yourself as a person that's publishing a plugin?
The donate link is handled again in the text file. There's every plugin in the WordPress.org repository has a readme.txt file.
Yep.
And that file is used to generate the pages on WordPress.org for your plugin. So if you go to a plugin, you'll see that it has like a description tab and an installation tab and a settings tab. And all those are sections of that README file.
Okay.
And the donate link is basically part of that README file. So if you don't have one in there, you obviously just doesn't appear on that page. But I just have one that directs to a page on my blog that sort of just says, and says, you know, thanks for using this plugin, so on, and here's my Amazon wish list. But
right.
Because you know, I don't want to make it too complicated, and I don't particularly want donations. If someone feels it's nice to do, then great. You know, I think better than a donation is a nice review on the WordPress.org, you know, on the review to say, you know, we'd really like this. And, you know, it's really nice getting those emails in when you just think, well, someone's used that and really enjoyed it and thought it was good.
Oh, that's good then. We should urge people then to do that, because I know that I try and leave reviews of things when I've used them, especially for long-term ones, and also donations. A couple of weeks ago, I just sent a small... It was only a small donation. I mean, he might have got it. He was in America, and I only sent him a tenner. So
yeah,
it's not loads, but I'd been using this plugin for a good couple of years, only every now and again, but it was just so really useful. I thought, well, I hope that he's got 100 people that have just sent him a tenner, so that some of his time is kind of like paid back to him, because it basically, it is a labour of love, isn't it? It takes much longer to maintain than the money you get from it.
Yeah, it does. A lot of people don't put stuff on the WordPress repository just for making money out of it, obviously. But, you know, they do it because, you know, it's helpful to them. They hope it helps other people. And it was, but yeah, reviews are really, really good. I always love getting a review, and particularly a positive one.
Yeah.
So do we.
Yeah, we love reviews as well.
It's surprising how good it, you know, good a feeling you get from it, really, when someone just literally writes, oh, I used this on a site, it's really good and everything. I had a day a couple of weeks ago, it was a really, you know, really difficult day of fixing bugs and things, and it was a real pain. And then right at the end of the day, I got a plugin review, and it's just brightened up your day, which was really nice.
That's really good. I think we found, since putting the podcast out, since putting something on there that people can look at, it's made us, I think, more conscious of kind of paying it forward. Definitely. In a way to other people, because I think with you, with plugins, with other podcasts and lots of people that make things available that are really useful to us, you realize just how much work it takes and sort of how much it means to somebody just to give them a review, or just to kind of give them a bit of a nudge forward. So with your users then, how do you generally find their attitude is? If they're coming to you with bugs or with problems or with feature requests or things like that, how do you find managing their expectations?
Hard. and something that I don't think I've got right at the moment. I mean, a lot of the questions you get on the support forums, and I need to be careful how I say this, don't I? They're sort of things that are very simple. And it, actually just looking at a file or the README file would answer that question. And you have to be, you know, you have to be nice to those people and try and help them. But I think people do forget that, you know, this is an open source plugin. I'm not making any money out of it. Yet they expect you to answer the support questions, you know, in a matter of hours. And it's like, I can't do that, really. I don't really actively monitor that support forum. I mean, I get an email when someone has put something on it. And if it's a bug, or I think it's a bug, then I'll be more proactive to sort of answer it and check it, rather than if it's just a, you know, how do I make this green or that sort of thing. Because I just don't have the time to sort of answer those questions, because I'm obviously not being paid for that time. But, you know, the bugs and things, I try and keep my eye on those, because obviously I want it to work.
Yeah, it's a very difficult... I've been on both sides of... Not with a plugin, but with other software that I've pretty much produced for free, or sites like charitable ones. You then... If people are then really quite critical of them, you do think, you know, didn't get paid for this, so I will fix it, but I'm not going to absolutely jump to it. But yeah. I've also been using a plugin that is, of course, free, but I've then maybe invested a good couple of days trying to get something to work, and it's not worked. And I thought, it's almost, it's hard to, balance your feelings, because actually it might be, it's a free plugin, but you still think, yeah, but I started using it in good faith. So I can understand why you're saying that you want to make sure that bugs are squashed.
Yeah.
But feature requests and things, there's no right for anyone to ask for a feature request, is there? Or to demand one, I mean.
I mean, you know, and as, if it's a feature request, then, you know, go forth and add it themselves. It's, you know, do work, add it yourself, you know, and even supply that patch back to me and I can add it to the plugin, you know, rather than sort of, you know, demanding that it's added or something like that. But it is a hard balance because you want to help people. You don't want people to be able to not use it and get stuck, but you can't actively do it all the time because you just don't have the time. You need to do other things that make you money.
Yeah, so it seems, I think it probably would be good to, I guess it's good to maintain quite a positive attitude towards it. And if people ask for things, to say to them, oh yeah, brilliant idea. Here's the repository. The Git repository, would love it if you could do a PR for that and we'll get it bundled in. And I, you know, it's sort of like a kind of positive way that builds the plugin instead of go and read the manual. Because they're the worst responses is people telling you to read the manual.
You can understand.
I mean, I get a lot of emails as well. People, you know, finding my email address or filling in the contact form on the website. And a lot of them are generally just support questions, which is fine. I mean, I want to help them, like I said, but I often sort of reply and say, you know, please post this on the forum because other people can see the answer then.
Exactly.
And actually, the forum is there for everyone to contribute to. So actually, there's probably going to be 10 or 15 or 20 people that have used this plugin and know a lot about it because they've used it, and therefore they might be able to answer you, not just myself. So, you know, by putting it on there, everyone gets the opportunity to share that knowledge rather than keeping it to ourselves.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
So you mentioned trying to involve people to help grow the plugin themselves. So how do you manage that? So if people do make a feature request and you invite them to add to the plugin, how do you find managing that? Have you had a lot of help from the community?
To date, not an awful lot. There have been a few people that have done a pull request and you know, suggested improvements and so forth. And that's all handled really through GitHub, trying to get everyone to use GitHub, which sometimes is difficult in itself because the people requesting haven't used Git or, you know, they're not familiar with that sort of way of working, and therefore it's difficult for them to contribute. So I suppose in a way that kind of puts a little bit of a barrier up to those people. But I think if you don't force people is the wrong word, but if you don't make them do it in that way, then you can't really handle the request and the number of people that want feature requests because it becomes a bit of a, you know, this person emailed me this and I've got this over here, and you need a central place to sort of store all those things. And I just use the issues on GitHub and the pull requests, which so far has worked okay. And there's been a few pull requests that I've sort of merged into the plugin that people have done. One in particular that was really good. Which made the plugin a lot better.
So given then the amount of work that it's taken for you to maintain it and the work that it takes into producing them, would you say developing plugins has been something that you've enjoyed and that you would think is a worthwhile thing for other developers to consider?
Absolutely. I think when you make something that you're going to put out to other people, it makes you a better developer because you have to write the code in a better way, really, because other people are going to use it. It makes you think about it a lot more, and it makes you really understand it better, I think, because, you know, other people are going to pull this thing apart, really, which they will, you know, and you want it to be as good as possible. So, you know, for that reason alone, I think it's worth, you know, shoving a plugin on the directory and saying, you know, go and use it, and people will give you feedback on it, good or bad, and you'll learn from it. You know, and learning is what this business is all about, really. You know, you can't stand still because things are changing all the time. So, you know, getting better at things is the key. So, yeah, for that reason, go for it, you know. Put one on there and let's everyone have a go with it.
There you go. And you can start emailing them with dozens of feature requests to get revenge.
Just got to find an idea then.
Yeah, so something else about maintaining the plugins, I think, is if... when you're always worried about, you know, people, it's going to break for people and so on. And one of the things that I sort of learned was that you've got to make things so that if you do decide to change them in the future, then they're not going to break for everyone that's using it the old way. And a good example of this was when I was doing the plugin, the Broadbean plugin, and it has a setting screen, and you obviously have to enter like a username and password and choose a few settings. And to start with, I was just using the WordPress core function to get those settings from the options table. And then I suddenly thought, well, actually, if I want to change those in a future version and do something different with them, that would actually then break everybody's site, because when they get those options, they would return nothing. So making a function for that within your plugin that then gets those options means that if everyone uses that function, you can then change how that function works, and actually it will still work for everyone else. So that was just something that I sort of learned along the way, really.
Yeah, so it requires you to sort of think ahead and also code things the way that, using the functions that WordPress make available to plugin developers, I guess.
Yeah. And it's just always thinking, you know, what's the impact of this going to be? And if I wanted to do something, you know, change something slightly. I mean, I did have an issue where the plugin went from version 1 to 1.02 to 2 straight away. And it was at that point where I had an internal decision with myself that I either take it down this road and it will actually break for people,
yeah,
but it will be so much better, or I keep it working but not so good or not as good, and then make it work for everybody. And I actually took the decision to say, no, I'm gonna move it to version 2. I'm gonna change the way it does things, and I'm just gonna inform users, you know, don't update if you're on version 1, basically, because it will unfortunately break things. And I think that's been a good decision to make. It's a shame that people won't be able to update unless they make significant changes to what they've done. But I think that was the right decision at the end of the day.
Yeah, we've got a similar problem with the shop e-commerce plugin, which I do a bit of support work on, and I've done a few little additions to, nothing major. It by default uses the database to store images, so it stores them in the database itself, which is a pain. But it's been like that for so long now that really we want to switch it to file system storage, or ideally to use the WordPress's own media library, so it's fully integrated. The only thing that's stopping that happening, even though it wouldn't be difficult to set it to use the media file system by default, is that you know that 7,000 users out there are going to have to make that switch. And how do you communicate that to them? And also, users, it's fine if they're technically minded or they're on a mailing list, but if they're just suddenly running some store out there that just suddenly stops showing images because they've updated the plugin. So it's a bit of a challenge. I can see why you had to make the decision early, and it was wise to make it very early before it goes big.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought, if you don't make this decision now, it actually gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Yeah. Because you could almost never go back. So I thought making that decision early, and actually I think you made a good point, informing your users as early as you can, you know. And I even sort of, you know, I have a little mailing list of the people that have inquired about it and so forth, and the people that were sort of using it, and I emailed them a mailing list and said, this is changing in the next release, which might be released next month. You know, if you're using this version, please don't update. Here's what you can do. And sort of really informing them and keeping them up to date on what they can do to, if they wanted to use the newest version, then that's key as well. Not just sort of like dropping it and landing it in their inbox and press update breaks.
Yeah.
At least keep them up to date with what's going on.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, excellent. So I think that's a good place to wrap up. And I think it seems to be, we've spoken to others who have developed plugins. We spoke to Jonathan Davis. I think he produces a commercial plugin. But one of the things I think that he took away from it is that he quite liked the way that he engaged with the community, because I think, like you said, it makes you a better developer, but I think it maybe encourages a bit more engagement with the community, doesn't it? So, yeah. Okay, we'll wrap up there and we'll do a jukebox.
Okay. So that brings us now to our jukebox. For the first time ever, I don't have a jukebox entry. and our guest doesn't have a jukebox entry. So it's just down to you, Mark. You need to fly the flag here.
It's all down to me. So I've picked a suitably pretentious sounding one.
Great. Trumpets and folk music.
It's a little bit... Ben's accused me of having a slightly medieval kind of...
Pirate folk.
It sounds a little bit like War of Worldcraft music. Yes. And the one I've got today is a track called Aliquot. Which sounds like somebody saying Alley Cat in a weird accent.
Okay.
But by an artist called Poppy Aykroyd. It's kind of a classical type thing. Ben's face has fallen. It's violin and piano. But one of the things I like is when you have music played on classical instruments that has kind of a slightly electronic feel. Mm. And what she does is she records using a bow or plucking the strings or using the inside of the instrument. I'm not sure how that works. But then she digitally processes them quite a lot. And it just has quite an interesting sound. And the track in particular that I am featuring for Jukebox kind of had that familiarity that you get with a track that you really like. Like the key changes come in the places where you expect them and, you know, the chords progress in the way that you expect. So it has that kind of familiarity. So... yeah.
Okay, let's take a listen to that then. Okay, that was lovely. And what do you want to mention as well? You had another one.
Yeah, because it's all down to me. I thought I'm going to put another one in. This one isn't available on Spotify, that's right. But it is available on SoundCloud where we host our podcast. But it's an artist called Moonfinger.
Right.
And it's more kind of, it's probably more up your kind of alley because it's very kind of ambient, electronic-y.
Okay.
And he's got a series of tracks on there, all of which are good. Some of them are very short. I think I came across one as backing for a video. And I just sort of went in search of the artist. And so, yeah, so he's an honourable mention. So we'll put a link to some of his tracks in the show notes.
All right. Okay. So that brings us to the end of our show. So firstly, thank you ever so much, Mark. Mark Wilkinson. We're going to link to your bio on... your Twitter feed, and how else can other people get in contact with you?
Well, Twitter's the best way, I guess, at WP Mark. I also have a blog where I just sort of write about general WordPress stuff, development. That's at markwilkinson.me. And if you want to find out a bit more about the WP Broadbean plugin, that's at wpbroadbean.com.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
And yeah, thank you.
Okay, it's been a pleasure. And we would just like to say to our listeners, please leave us a review. We know we've got listeners. We just we would just like you to. Are you? Oh, thank you.
But yeah, as we mentioned, and I think as Mark mentioned, it's for anybody that puts anything out there. It's kind of the lifeblood to whatever project, podcast, or plugin, or whatever, getting good reviews, because it can be a little frustrating. No, not frustrating. It's like when you know you've got listeners or users who are using or listening quite contentedly and they don't leave a review. It's kind of a bit like, so if you use any of Mark's plugins, then leave Mark a review. And if you listen to our podcast, please leave us a review at iTunes review. It's particularly well received. But if you leave us a review on whatever platform you like to listen to us on, you can come to our website, which is relativepowers.uk. This episode will be put up there with show notes and also with a comment thread. So if you want to join the discussion, then go ahead. And as I mentioned, we're available on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and a few other things. We are, what have I forgotten? Twitter.
Nothing.
No, Twitter. Relative Powers at Twitter. What's on Facebook as well. And Gmail.
Stop.
Google Plus.
Stop. Okay.
That's been brilliant. And visit us.
Thanks very much then. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.